Thanks so much for joining me today, Corey.
Oh, you're very welcome.
So the first thing I think we should probably talk about is about October and it being Autism Awareness Month, but actually the fact that it's not considered to be Autism Awareness Month. Do you mind elaborating a little bit on that?
Yeah, so in Canada, we used to always celebrate Autism Awareness Month in October, and then what happened a few years ago, and I should remember the exact year, but I forget now, Canada ended up becoming a signatory on the United Nations Declaration that April 2nd was World Autism Awareness Day, and basically as a result, what happened is not all, but the majority of autism organizations and majority of self-advocates sort of switched everything to April to kind of, it was like, well, we've got World Autism Awareness Day on April 2nd. It makes sense that April, the rest of April, would be Autism Month. And now what a lot of people are doing is we're moving away from simply Autism Awareness Month, but calling it either Autism Acceptance or Autism Awareness and Acceptance Month, as we don't simply want people to be aware of autism. We want them to accept it and embrace it because it is very common and it's just becoming more common all the time. So,
what is your experience with facilitating the acceptance of autism?
Well, I guess I've done a number of things. So I was with Autism BC for 7.5 years from basically December of 2012 until June of this past year, and when I left the organization. And in that time, I started connecting with and engaging with a lot of self-advocates. Through my role at Autism BC, I got introduced to the Canadian Autism Spectrum Disorders Alliance, which we all just say CASDIC at short. Mm-hmm. And they're a national organization that has representation from at least one of our major other national autism organizations, and most of the provincial and territorial organizations are members of CAS as well. And I was involved, I met some self-advocates through what was called the Canadian Autism Partnership Project. And they were kind of a little more ahead of them things than I was. And that's when I first started learning about, you know, the push for acceptance, because it's like, well, we've done a lot of work on awareness over the years and making sure that, people know about autism and kind of a little bit of what it looks like and how it represents itself. But what we realized what people weren't doing a good job of is that there was a lack of acceptance, which means sort of not just being, okay, I've heard of autism. Okay, well, that's good. You know, I've heard of a lot of things that, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean I always accept it, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's when we started seeing people pushing towards, you know, like actually embracing autism, accepting it as being just another sort of way people live, you know, whether by choice or not. And so that's sort of how I first became aware of that, and then started engaging with other autistics across the country in BC. And then we started seeing a movement in the autism organizations world as well to push towards that. And again, the idea is not just to say, yeah, we've heard of it, we know about it, but okay, like you actually embrace it with open arms. Because for many of us, yeah, it can be a disability, but for a lot of us, there's actually an autism expert, Temple Grandin from the States, that use the term different, not less. So, you know, some people don't like to use it as a term disability. They just like to use the term difference. I still see it as a disability too, because it certainly can be challenging. But in a lot of ways, it's just we have a unique way of living because of our autism. It gives us this unique perspective. We maybe do things a little differently, and we just want people to be okay with that.
Definitely. That totally makes sense. You're still a person, right? You just do things
Absolutely.
A little differently. Yeah, that's great. Now, you have quite a bit of personal experience with autism. Do you want to tell me a little bit about your personal journey with it?
Yeah, so I am on the autism spectrum myself, or what we use a lot of, in the autism world, a lot of us prefer what we call identity first language. So rather than saying person with autism, we'll refer to ourselves as autistic. So I'm an autistic self-advocate. I was first diagnosed with what was called Asperger's syndrome back in 2001. And Asperger's, the term doesn't exist clinically anymore, but still exists in sort of everyday language. Asperger's was the old clinical term for basically autism. It basically at the time seemed a higher functioning form of autism. Now what we've done is we've kind of moved away from describing things based on functioning levels and look at based on the need for support. So what we used to call Asperger's, people would now, I'm not sure if that would be autism level 1 or autism level 2 now on the new diagnostic criteria, but basically be someone that doesn't need as many supports. And so when I first got that diagnosis, I'm like, what the heck is Asperger's syndrome? And I found the form of autism. Like, okay, I've heard of autism, but I really didn't know anything about it at the time. It was sort of awareness in terms of I knew it existed, but I really couldn't tell you anything about it. So my mom and I kind of went on this journey of going to the good old-fashioned World Wide Web and started looking at a lot of good websites to learn more about Asperger's syndrome and autism and what it looked like. And it started, a lot of light bulbs started going off in my head. It started explaining why I did a lot of things I did, everything like, you know, the rocking I did as a kid and some of the kind of stimming or, you know, self-stimulatory kind of, you know, actions I did and then still do, like even if I'm talking, kind of twirling, you know, I got my finger in my shirt twirling it because it's just something I do without even realizing it. And so I really got in touch with my autistic side. I was trying to become a teacher. I was in a program in Terrace to become certified to be a secondary school teacher. And one of the characteristics of autism is we're not always very filtered. So we tend to be very blunt, very honest and direct, and aren't always as tactful as maybe people I like. And I was a little frustrated with the classroom teacher that was sort of supervising me in my first practicum, and I guess I made an unfiltered comment. It wasn't like foul language or anything like that, but she got offended, and that basically ended my career, you know, my whole future career as a teacher. And I'm like, okay, I need to learn more about this because this just cost me my dream job that I hadn't even become fully qualified for yet before I even had a chance to get that job, but it cost me it. And so I got in touch with with Heather Boylan, who was the coordinator at Autism Society BC and Prince George at the time, and started learning more and got involved with starting a support group. And then from there, when Heather left, I applied for her position in Autism BC, as we call it now, and I got the job. And it's just been an incredible learning journey. Every time I meet people, I learn their story to learn more about myself. You know, there's always new information coming out. What we thought we knew 10 years ago, we realized we didn't know. And I suspect 10 years from now, we'll know more about what we don't know, you know?
Oh, that's awesome. That's quite an extensive journey.
Sorry, I could be a little long-winded at times.
No, that's great. That was awesome. Now, what made you first realize that you needed to go and get a diagnosis?
That's actually an interesting story. I wasn't seeking an autism diagnosis. I had no clue I was on the spectrum. I have known for years and have been diagnosed for years with ADHD, attention deficit, and I went to see a neuropsychiatrist at UBC because I was in university at UBC and I was looking for help to better focus. I was looking for help strategies to manage my ADHD, and through a complicated process I won't get into, my starting with my family doctor, ultimately I ended up seeing this neuropsychiatrist. And, yeah, in typical psychiatrist fashion, they pick up on things, ask you a million questions. And when I got the report, he said that my family doctor had this diagnosis of Asperger's syndrome. And so that's where I first got that diagnosis and had no idea how it was going to change my life in a lot of ways for the better. So, yeah, it was actually, I wasn't looking for an awesome diagnosis at all. Then, actually, in 2008, I saw a psychologist in Prince George and had a psych assessment, and she actually confirmed the Asperger's diagnosis because they were still using the old terminology then. And at that time, I learned that my ADHD was actually what they call a co-occurring condition. Basically, autism is a primary diagnosis, and the ADHD was something that occurs along with it. So basically, Children's Hospital, when they gave me my diagnosis of ADHD in 85, didn't have it all right. They only had half the answers.
That must have opened up a whole new world of experiences for you. That's incredible.
Oh, it has been an incredible journey. And we don't have time to share the entire journey because the listeners would get bored long before I finish talking. So,
what does therapy look like for people with autism?
That's a good question. That could actually be a controversial subject because there's a lot of different things out there. And the problem is a lot of them aren't evidence-based. A lot of them have proved to be ineffective and in a few cases actually harmful. Hmm. And so we don't really like, everyone really likes to use the word therapy anyway. It can be kind of a pejorative term to some.
Sure.
But there is an evidence-based method that called applied behavior analysis. Now, I support it. A lot of self-advocates don't. 20 years ago, even though it was effective, the way they did it probably wasn't that great. There was a lot of, it probably was maybe harmful. But just like everything in medicine and everything in the world of treatment, things evolve, and I'm not saying it's perfect, but we know a lot more now. And applied behavior analysis, they use a lot more with the kids, but sometimes with adults as well. And basically what it tries to do is address some of the behavior challenges, not all, but some autistic kids may have. And basically what they try to do is use different techniques like positive reinforcement and token economy and a lot of different things. I don't know everything about it because it's not my field, but it's been proven by research to be very effective. And basically what kids learn to do is they learn to substitute the challenging behaviors with behaviors that are less challenging. And like I said, there are a number of self-advocates. You mentioned the word EBA, and they just burn with rage. It is controversial, but it is proven, and that's why, I do support it. But I accept, obviously, the people, decisions of others to make their own choices.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of other things that people have talked about, these things like dolphin therapy and play therapy, and a lot of that is, it's just like cancer treatment or anything else. You got to do your research because, it's easy enough for somebody to say they have a PhD and say, I've come up with this new method of treating autism. And, but it doesn't necessarily mean it works, and a lot of these things have been researched. There are some things that potentially may work that we just, there hasn't been enough research done yet. I know that, I like the idea of therapeutic riding. I think that has potential benefit, but there, at this point, there hasn't been enough research done to really get everybody on board with that. But it's just like everything else, the way we're doing things today, we're probably going to laugh at 20 years from now. Mm-hmm. It's no different than medicine,
Yeah, and it's different for every person, too, I imagine, since it is a spectrum disorder.
No, there's a thing. If you met one person with autism, you met one person with autism. It is a spectrum disorder. A lot of people now call it autism spectrum disorder. And so you get everywhere, like some people figure that Einstein may have been on the spectrum. He obviously was never diagnosed back mm-hmm. then, but he would be what they would have once called Asperger's. There's a handful of people that, there's that movie Rain Man, which I actually haven't seen, but it's famous for the people in autism who are, like, extremely intelligent at this event. That's not most people. Most people are somewhere in between. There are the nonverbal, the people who are needing a lot of supports and probably will need supports, the rest of their life. Most people fall somewhere in between, such as myself. We're not this brilliant genius, but we're, on the other hand, we are verbal and don't need, full-time support. So, but it really varies widely, and it really, that's why you need to see a psychiatrist, a qualified psychiatrist and a psychologist to get the diagnosis, because they really need to do all the testing, rule out other things before they can actually rule in autism. So
that's great. Do your research.
That's awesome. Exactly. Just like anything. Just like if you have cancer, if I was diagnosed with cancer tomorrow, I want to do my research,
you know,
before I just accept the first treatment offered me,
So even from just the brief conversation we've had today, I think I've learned that there's a lot of misinformation out there surrounding the autistic society and community. So are there any kind of like stereotypes that you want to debunk or address?
Yeah, well, the one myth I want to address, I think most people by now know it's a myth, but it still prevails and some people still believe it. Vaccines don't cause autism. There's mm-hmm. a lot of some people. There was a study done by Dr. Andrew Wakefield a bunch of years back, and a British doctor, supposed doctor, claiming that the mumps, measles, rubella vaccine caused autism. His researchers later found it to be fraudulent, and he was stripped of his medical license. The journal published a retraction, but unfortunately there's still a lot of people out there that are convinced that if they give their child a vaccination for the mumps, measles, rubella, the child's going to get autism. We know it's likely genetic and has nothing to do with the vaccine, so I wanted to get that off. Another stereotype that's common, there's a few. There's some people that think that people with autism can't work. Well, I've been working most of my adult life, and we are greatly underrepresented in the employment field, in world of employment, which is sad,
mm-hmm.
But we can work, and a lot of us do work, and we should be given a chance because we got great skills, and we actually usually have better performance, fewer sick days. We usually get sick less. We tend to stick around with our employer a lot longer than the average person, and yeah, there's a lot of actual business benefits to hiring autistics. I'd say another common stereotype is that autistics don't have empathy or that we lack empathy. That's also not true. We don't always show it maybe the same way a non-autistic person would. But I still feel, you know, if someone's sad, I can see they're sad sometimes. I may have a hard time relating. I may sometimes not be sure how to respond, but I definitely can see that they're sad and I can feel their sadness. And I remember a time in high school going to a drama performance with some of my castmates, and my one castmate had just lost her uncle, and she's very sad. Everyone gathered around to support her. I felt for her. I was very sad for her. I didn't join the circle not because I was lacking empathy, but because I didn't know how to respond. So there's a difference, and we need to clarify. We aren't these unfeeling robots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're just different, but not less. I like
exactly,
that.
Exactly, I love that, exactly.
Now, if people wanted to learn more about getting involved in the autistic community or learning more about autism, where would you direct them?
Well, there's different places they could go. Autism BC sometimes looks for volunteers. They can look them up online. There's also the Pacific Autism Family Network and Prince George sometimes run programs. I don't know what everyone's doing right now because of COVID. Mm-hmm. But if they just want to get involved as an advocate, like, they could always just get in touch with me. I'd be happy to kind of to connect them with different people. I've got friends who are self-advocates to give them some guidance. And I'd be happy to give them some tips on the do's and don'ts of advocacy. You know, I've actually done some presentations on that. And if anyone's listening, I do workshops and training for businesses, teachers, anybody, if they want to learn more about autism. And I can tailor my, I do love public speaking. I'm very good at it. I can tailor my presentation training to the needs of the client. But yeah, anybody looking to get more involved as an advocate can just give me a call, 250-562-3812. And I'd be happy to talk with them and put them in touch with some other advocates, and we can share stories, and they can decide what kind of an advocate they want to be, you know?
That's so wonderful. Just building a whole new supportive community around it. And yes. Building that acceptance piece. That's
absolutely
awesome.
I think it's very important.
Yeah.
And I would encourage anybody, if you've been found to be autistic, then, you know, then become a self-advocate if you're up to it. Doesn't mean you're out there causing trouble or anything. It just means you want to make your voice heard and you want to be involved. You know, people think of advocate means we're always out there, we're doing protests in front of the government buildings. That's not what it's all about at all. Like, I've never once been involved in any picketing in front of a government building or anything like that. It's just about making our voice heard and making sure people know about us and that they're accepting us, you know.
Totally. Well, thank you so much for your perspective on all of this. It is so informative and it illuminates so much that we definitely need to keep working on as a society. So thank you so much for your time.
Courtney, and hopefully I'll hear from you in April when it is awesome.
Yes, definitely. We'll definitely bring that out in April again, for sure.
Yes.